It does. Okay, but I think it might even be a fair question, what happens if this movie's an hour and 45 minutes and it only did that at the very end?
An elevator tape projection.
Hey, welcome. We're all here. It's Adam, it's Donovan, it's Natalie. We are the host of Taking It Down, the streaming and TV podcast. Well, speaking of streaming, we're going to talk about this Netflix movie that was released this past weekend, Leave the World Behind. It's directed by Sam Esmail. You might know him if you watch Mr. Robot or the show Homecoming on Amazon Prime Video. First season of Mr. Robot, I can highly recommend. First season of Homecoming, I can highly recommend. I just didn't see the second one, so I can't tell you much. This movie, Leave the World Behind, stars Julia Roberts, Ethan Hawke, Mahershala Ali. It's on Netflix, based on the book with the same name, produced by Barry and Michelle Obama.
You heard of him?
I have heard of him. He has had an interesting trajectory for careers, hasn't he?
I mean, there's only one way to go from being president, I guess.
Make movies. Produce movies.
Do you think his kid got him that job?
He probably got the job for his kid. Isn't that the case? Probably to put her in some screenwriting positions?
I think Lena Dunham did that, actually.
Okay. Well, he might have. Yeah, could be either or.
What a leftist hellscape we live in.
Let's talk about that.
I'm just kidding. I'm just trying. That sentence was, did Barack Obama get a job at Netflix so that his daughter could be a screenwriter? No, Lena Dunham did that. Also, Donald Trump was president for 4 years and there was a pandemic. It's like, what the hell is going on?
I mean, this movie taps into some of that shit, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into it. Before we spoil anything, I'm going to tell everyone who's listening, this is a train wreck of an episode, and I hope you're on board. This movie...
I thought you were going to say it was a train wreck of a movie.
No, I fucking loved this movie. Every scene, I was just...
Gotta go.
You didn't, did you?
No. This was a terrible movie. But you continue. You had such lovely things to say.
Here we go.
I loved it.
This is turning into a good episode.
Yeah, this is a good episode.
Donovan's going to be the producer in this episode, since he hasn't seen it, can this be like a shock jock radio thing, and we give him a little soundboard?
Yeah, do it. What do we got, Donovan?
All I can think of is sound bites from Arrested Development. So.
Well, that's fine.
Okay. Sure. The sound effects are fine, too.
Yeah, okay. I'll do it myself.
Bum, 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 bum. Boy, it's going to be fun to edit this episode. This movie is 2 hours 20 minutes, and I did not find a second of it boring, and I can't figure out where Adam lies on this. Jump in here. Just general thoughts. Did you like it? Am I solo here?
Okay, so after it ended, among other things that Natalie said that I'm sure we will get to, she said that felt about 20 minutes too long, in addition to these other problems that I have with it. I don't know that I would go 20. I do think it could have been cut a bit, but I agree with you that it was a very quick 220. I was just saying my problems with it are not that I felt that it was bloated or that it was too long. I just maybe there was a slightly sharper film in it with less time.
My comment on the time was less about the runtime and more about there were so many prolonged, overdone camera tricks that had you cut some of those down, you could have cut 20 minutes off the movie.
That would have been my main complaint. You said, what are my feelings about it? And I would start by complaining about the need for every shot to be spinning into place. I don't know. Everything felt too clever. Like, almost if you have to dress something up this much, are you telling me you don't have faith in the story that you're telling?
That is a Sam Esmail signature. He uses stylized camera work. He's in Mr. Robot, he did this way more, this thing I'm about to mention. He would frame the character so small on the screen or in one corner, so out of your main focal point, you had to find them sometimes. Like, yeah, you'd hear a voiceover, sure, and you'd think, okay, well, where is he? And then he would be tiny in the left-hand corner.
Right. He broke a lot of rules. Like, it got popular about 10 years ago they did it with Julia Roberts a lot, where she would be speaking to the left side of the screen, but also be on the left.
Yep.
So the classic thing would be to put the person on the right,
mm-hmm,
to make you feel like you're seeing half of the conversation. They did that a lot, but that was like the tip of the iceberg of like rules that were broken from Cinematography 101. Like what you're talking about putting them, you know, they maybe just put their head in the frame.
Yeah.
Real strange, which I don't mind framing stuff like that, but I do agree with Nat that the spinning camera work, all of that got a bit tiresome. But then there were also great shots, like early on when they're driving to the house, they go through the car and it's like a tracking shot. And then it goes from Julia Roberts to Ethan Hawke, past the kids in the back seat, and then out a closed window, which was really impressive.
And it had these gentle glides from one point of view when he would do that. I think I love it. I even like the dizzying stuff. I can see that's a fair and valid point. If you can't get on board with it, I do not disagree with it. I did find myself wondering, God, what would this be like if I saw this in a theater and it did all these dizzying shots?
It just got a little bit exhausting to me.
I think I would have to leave.
Yeah, I can see how people might have to leave, but I liked it. And I will say this too. I'll have to admit this. I watched half of it last night and then I got super tired. Not because of the movie. I just had a long day and not a lot of sleep the night before. And so I picked it back up this morning pretty early and I just loved it. I thought every bit of it was fascinating. I was going to recommend it. And I probably still will. It was just interesting that you guys had these different takes on it.
I think that I was, as we were watching it, a lot more caught up in it than Natalie was. I don't know where that leaves me on how good a movie that I think it was, but I was pretty into it, and I could tell she was not.
Gotcha. I think that's a valid way of viewing it. For those who know, we haven't even talked about really what it's about, and we'll do that without spoiling for a minute. We've got this upper-crust Brooklyn couple who decide, on spur of the moment, let's go get this Airbnb out on Long Island. Very nice, affluent. They take their two kids. One is 16, the other's 13, I think. The older one's a boy and the younger one's a girl. They go out to Long Island and, you know, you get your typical leave the world behind kind of dystopian stuff beginning to happen while they're there. One of the main things that happens is the owner of the house shows back up with his daughter. There's a lot of cat and mouse suspicion on are they really the owners or not. And it goes from there. I won't say much more. Based on a book, though, if you've read it.
This and Barbarian are like Airbnb thrillers.
Yeah, kind of. But this
the emerging one is, genre.
This one is like the, I thought about this too, that it's the very grounded, realistic kind of horror.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh shit, that could definitely happen. Oh, what would happen if my cell phone really did lose service and my GPS doesn't work? Those kinds of things were happening in the movie. Let's just go ahead and get into spoilers, though. Just mark it right here in case anyone's listening. That's the takeaways. The first thing I'll bring up is not spoiler. So I loved how he, Esmail, created tension with the editing. And I guess that's something that y'all also found just too much. Too jarring or just too much of. Trying too hard, really. Is that the editing specifically? Like how he would use, there were two big scenes where he did it where G.H. sees the plane coming in, and then the kids are in the woods, and Clay is getting bombed with pamphlets from a drone. Remember this scene? And it's just cut between all of those four different people. I didn't mention that Julia Roberts is back at home talking to the daughter. And that just built tension. It felt like a really great episode of TV that's going to leave you in a cliffhanger. But, of course, this is a movie, so they're not quite going to do that.
Editing and cinematography, you're separating those, right?
Oh, yes. 100% here. Yeah.
The edit of he seemed to bring things to a boil several times on independent storylines.
Right.
That all seem to be, like, you're kind of led to believe that all these things are happening in the same 30 seconds.
Yeah, you know? And they were, yeah.
I thought that was really good. It happens again at the end.
It does. And it happens once more in the middle with the self-driving cars. Because it cuts from that to some other things.
You do wonder, like, how many times do you get to use that trick in one film? But it was effective. I don't want to complain too much about it. That sequence that you're talking about, specifically of, you know, the pamphlets falling and everything else that was going on, the plane falling, that's one of the more memorable 2 minutes in the whole thing.
It did. Okay, but I think it might even be a fair question. What happens if this movie's an hour and 45 minutes and it only did that at the very end or right at the climax?
Yeah.
And you might have just a stellar movie for you guys, in your opinion.
Well, it's almost like using like a key change in a song. Like how many times, How many times do you get to do that and have the emotional payoff that you're looking for? Maybe every time, because this one used, it could be a bit claustrophobic at times when it was only, not claustrophobic, but very micro in its view of something that appeared to be national, probably global. And the times when it zoomed out, there was big payoff in the ways that that was, like I'm thinking of the when it happens the last time, or any time that they zoomed from Long Island and you could see New York in the distance. That was another fun editing trick that he incorporated well. Sometimes in tandem with those boiling moments that you're talking about, and sometimes not.
Yeah, and you know, he picked two specific families to say, this is who we're going to examine if this were to happen. And the book, I'm sure, is where this comes from, of course. Julia Roberts, I thought it was smartly written dialogue, but did you not think so?
Natalie's got to get some of her hate in here eventually. I keep waiting for her to jump in because I know she has an opinion on all this.
My only, I think Julia Roberts was great in this movie.
She's not going to let you down.
No, but it was a little odd to me that there was a through line, and honestly, it seems like the most important storyline because of the ending. Of the kid being obsessed with watching Friends. And did she not notice her mother was in a few episodes? That's I could think about.
That's a good point. How meta can we make this? I forgot she was in a few episodes. That had to be stripped from the book. I have not read the book, obviously, but I was honest. I just kept thinking, God, how much money did they have to pay for get Friends clips on this in this movie? But no, I thought that the dialogue was pretty smartly written, could be taken word from the book, because they would talk like educated people talk without being too over the top with it.
I don't know. There were times when like they would end a scene with just like a weird, like obscure saying.
Yeah.
Like old girl laying in bed and she would just say something bizarre and then the camera would pan down. It's like, what? This is dumb. Like, this is trying so hard to be something clever, and it's just, I can see all the lines. All the strings are viewed, are visible.
Natalie said something about, you phrased it really well. What did you say?
I said this after we watched the trailer, and then I said it again after we watched the movie as a confirmation, that this movie looks like it's going to be too good to be bad good, and too bad to be good. And I still stand by that.
That's good summation.
And I love a disaster apocalypse-style movie. I consume a lot of that. And this was trying to do that smartly, and it came off like an M. Night Shyamalan, The Happening.
It did feel like that at times, but minus the hokey, mysterious voodoo stuff that can crop up in his.
There were hints at that. When all, like... the animals were doing weird stuff.
The
like
animals.
That's some M. Night Shyamalan footprints everywhere you go.
Yeah.
What do we think was going on with the animals?
Well, they say, don't they? Didn't they say that these there were certain?
They made some weird, obscure comment, just like a backhanded, like it could mess with the migration patterns. Why? Why would it mess with the migration patterns? That made no sense to me.
That didn't make sense.
It didn't make sense. And why would all of the deer surround them and then, like, the head deer walk up to them?
The head deer.
He's the deer that signs the other deer paychecks.
He was, I mean, he was, like, clearly the boss deer. Why are you laughing
yeah,
at
he
that,
was.
I don't know. It's just a weird way to phrase it. The head deer.
The biggest one with the biggest, I mean, it almost looked like an elk or something. They all, like, parted, the sea parted, the deer sea parted, so that this one could come up and examine them.
Do we hear how absurd this conversation is?
Yeah.
Because this is
movie. And the little girl kept saying, they're trying to tell us something. What cryptic secret?
They weren't.
I honestly think that it was in there to maybe give a allude to some of the things that the movie was trying to say. When you give, if you were to give any animal logic and reasoning that humans have, they're going to become the worst animal because survival trumps empathy. And I just thought that the nature was a hint at that kind of thing, but forcefully done, yeah.
Well, but the animals had, the deer at least, had organized and were clearly surviving together, which was the opposite of...
Because they don't have the reasoning of humans, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I also didn't know if it was trying to use, like, nature is innocent, not in the, like, sweet and fluffy kind of way, but, like, innocent as in, like, we have become corrupted from our true form and nature is the right way to be, and, like, with, you know, humanity is about to do something that destroys it but takes it back. I mean, what were they getting at?
Yeah, it was something like that. I couldn't quite put my finger on it.
That just feels very out of place in the movie.
Julia Roberts' character, what was her name?
Julia.
Yeah, Julia. I know everyone's name except for hers. Imaginary numbers moving around imaginary money to get imaginary success. That, to me, was a good line, but this movie also seems to say that the repercussions of all that are very real.
Of having money?
Well, when the shit goes down, when all that shit goes down. Cue Cypress Hill here. When the shit goes down, you know, no one's really in control.
Yeah, but some people can afford to be in mansions in Long Island away from the shit.
Yeah, that's true. If nothing else, I hope you guys took away that if when digital goes, you better have a good vinyl collection.
Good vinyl or a good DVD collection.
Yeah, that too, with friends. So when the son, Archie, when he starts pulling his own teeth out.
Didn't love that.
That's the shit of nightmares.
Didn't love
like,
that.
Like, literal. Oh, I put my hand up to block it because I couldn't stand the pulling of the teeth.
Nah, I hated it. But, I mean, it could have gone full-on surreal nightmare, like you said. Like, that's up there with, like, I need to run and I can't kind of stuff.
Am I the only one who has the nightmares about your teeth falling out?
I've never had that one.
I've had that one.
I hear it's common, but I've never had it.
I've had it, I think.
Yeah, it's horrible. So what'd you think of the final scene? The girl gets into the bunker. Everyone's scattered still. They don't know where she is yet. She watches her friend's episode. What'd you think of that?
Come on, Matt.
No thoughts. There's nothing to think about it. It's not saying anything. It's not doing anything. It's just the end. Who cares?
You know what I did? You guys are going to laugh. You know what I did?
You cried.
I clapped my hands and said, bravo.
You clapped. You definitely clapped.
I clapped.
You clapped along with the Friends theme song, and then you stood up
no,
at the end and clapped like a damn plane landing.
That theme song is horrible. I didn't clap like clap. I just clapped my hands together once and said, bravo. I thought it was good.
Like Bert Cooper.
I stared like dead-faced at the screen, and then I texted you and I said, you better damn well watch this movie. If I watch this for no reason, I'm going to be upset.
Oh, I watched it. Loved it. Other than Archie pulling out his own teeth.
Man, Natalie is foul over this episode.
I'm sorry.
No, this is
this was so bad.
This is good TV.
This is a bad one, guys.
She didn't weigh in on the editing question, and I'm curious at what point, why do you feel like it didn't, I understand what you're saying, that it wasn't bad enough to be good, because I have also sat through these disaster movies with you where it's just like, you know, we joked.
It's candy.
Yeah, it's candy. And like when the plane, or I'm sorry, the boat starts coming towards the beach and it just slow motion turns to destruct. Donovan, the whole thing starts with, oh, look, there's an oil tanker. Huh, it seems kind of close. And then it just gets closer and closer and closer until they're all like, it's not going to stop.
Uh-huh.
And they have to run from an oil tanker that grounds itself on a public beach. I should love this movie.
That's comedy right there.
Based on that alone. It's a big boat. It was in the ocean.
Oh, here's the thing. When this happens and The Rock is also on the screen, the visual is so big and exciting and over the top that you're like, I may not be scared right now, but this is so fun. Like, I love the sand blowing up everywhere, people screaming, and the whole deal.
Plus, it's just
and this
a big
was just
boat.
Like, huh, this is happening. And it seemed like every supposedly tense moment was just like so underplayed that if they want people to have fun at this thing, you got to make it bigger. You got to make it. It's got to be a little cheesier.
See, that's actually speaking specifically about the boat scene. I would disagree with that because the way that everyone reacted, like from going from, oh, that's not going to hit us to, oh, shit, grab everything and run. To the kid taking his phone out. You're like, you're kind of waiting on him to do that. And he did it. And then it just shows them in an orderly evacuation. You know, because that's really what would happen. Not like anything exciting.
Yeah, but who wants to watch that? And then from that point on, like, you would think, okay, now we can raise the stakes and now everything should be a little scary or like a little tense or exciting. And it just wasn't. Everything was played in this, like, just very slow, hey, here's this weird thing that's happening. I guess we'll sit here and watch it happen.
But see, I think...
like, this was such a monotone movie to me.
The fallout from that was that the parents were freaking out, but the kids just kind of went on with their day. They wanted to go swimming again in the pool, which is, like, fairly accurate to... I mean, don't you think the kids were just like...
But the parents were also, like, not that worried. They're over there getting drunk every night.
I mean, did you go to Publix after the tornado in Tuscaloosa? You literally couldn't buy beer on April 27th. But I'm not even joking. It's like, that's exactly how, I mean, how many people were joking? Well, not even really joking, but when the pandemic started, waking up every day, like, am I kind of hungover or do I finally have COVID? Like, that is how people react disasters and uncertainty.
I guess this goes down to, I'm not looking to watch TV to watch real life. I want escapism. Give me something big and dumb and exciting.
But that's, you're arguing against, like, the intentions of the movie.
Yep. I am doing that. Yeah, I am. If you are going to put out a trailer that looks like a fun disaster apocalypse movie and then give and serve up,
I think
this,
you only thought it was going to be a fun
it. My expectations were not met.
Because you saw a big boat or something like that.
You're right. Don't put that. And then here's my other beef. The entire trailer was, you saw all those scenes in the first like 20 minutes of this movie. That's never.
That's
a good
every
sign.
Trailer now, though.
And I don't know that you did. There were, I mean, we're deep in spoiler territory now. So the standoff between Mahershala Ali and Kevin Bacon, when he finally shows up, there was some guns in the trailer. And
yeah,
that was the climax.
But like mostly like the big, that was the climax?
Don't you think that was probably the climax? Because yeah. That was, to me, that was the climax of what they were trying to say.
Yeah.
Because the slow building of trust, I thought a thing that it did really well, I'm going to end up arguing with you and making myself like this movie. The slow way that the two families learn to trust each other and come together,
right,
is kind of beautifully done, I thought, because it was slow and all of a sudden you just can't really pinpoint when the switch happened. You just know that it did. And now they're in this together. And I thought that was great and well done and very true to life. And then they run up against this, you know, let's assume some politics here, this libertarian hoarder nut job kind of guy who pulls a shotgun on people that he knows in times of crisis. And that newfound sense of camaraderie and we're in this together is immediately tested. And you see Mahershala Ali has been ready the whole time. Turns out he had a gun the whole time. So what does that really say about his interactions before? Yeah, I thought this was definitely like three points of view and motivations all clashing together. Because at that point, Mahershala Ali he's not doing it even for his kid or for himself. He's doing it for somebody he didn't know 48 hours ago.
Right. He didn't have to do it at all. I think what I like the most is the story of when all the technology fails, it's going to hurt even the richest. Not the richest of the rich, but like the affluent. Now, you couldn't tell this story with normal people, middle class or poor, because that would probably be more like the Kevin Bacon character, or a little closer to someone like that who might be a little bit more prepared, or the technology isn't as detrimental in some cases. I just really like the idea of people are fallible, right? And, you know, there's this idea that no one's in control when this shit goes down. And that to me was kind of scary. Like, I often think when I go to the doctor, this guy's just a dude. He is not a god. What if he didn't read that chapter in doctor school? And I'm sitting here with, do you guys not have these thoughts? Like, oh, that's just a human. That's just a, I go home and fart and shit, and he probably does too. What the, why am I relying on him? Do you ever think these things?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it just me?
No.
No.
Well, so this movie tapped into that part of my brain well enough for me to go, wonderful. I'm interested. I'm leaning in.
I thought it was definitely aided by some stellar acting pretty much all the way around.
For sure. 100%. But because you put Ali on screen, get him talking to Julia Roberts, or vice versa. Put Julia Roberts on screen, get her talking to Mahershala Ali or Ethan Hawke. here. I'm watching it. And that's why I did not watch the trailer. I didn't even know much about this movie. I just saw the day it was released, the cast list is based on this book. And I said, oh, I'm going to watch that. That's exactly what happened. So, and I ended up liking it.
I think I did too.
I thought the cast was great. I think they made one casting mistake.
Go on.
And that was casting Kevin Bacon. Nothing against Kevin Bacon.
Why though?
But when you have a scene, that's that, like, I guess it was tense.
You guess it was tense? They were aiming guns jumping. At each other, Natalie. You guess it was tense?
Hold on. That was supposed to be tense.
There you go.
And the framing, the camera work, the pictures. Anyways, if you're going to have that many cuts between Ethan Hawke, Mahershala Ali, and Kevin Bacon, two of those people need to not look exactly alike.
That's fair.
That's my beef.
Oh, my God.
That'll be my last
comment. No. That crossed my mind. I thought, man, they kind of look alike, don't they? You are right.
Yeah.
On the money. Okay, I'll agree with you on that point. And the dizzying camera work, I think that's a big thing. If that's kind of cinematography gets on your nerves, then this is not for you.
I just thought it was overused.
It was, yeah, I can see that.
Okay, if you pulled it back by 10 to 20%, it would have been easier to stomach, I think.
I think me knowing Ismail's way of filming, I was just expecting it already. I figured he would do all kinds of things like that.
Well, we watched a good bit of the first season of Mr. Robot.
Oh, okay.
It was still just, I mean, it just felt like every scene, especially in the front half of the movie. I'm thinking specifically of Julia Roberts walking into the house for the first time and the way that the camera followed her. It's like, man, we didn't got to do all this. Come on.
With Mr. Robot, I guess he had a smaller budget, so you didn't see quite as much as this. I bet he would have done more of it there, too. All right, well, that's what we think on Leave the World Behind on Netflix. Take your pick and run with it. You can watch it or not. Donovan, what do you think about this conversation?
Gold.
Write it in cement, he says.
They're so good.
All right, we'll see everyone next week. Next week, we got everything, I think, mapped out.
Ed and Natalie were so far apart from each other. I'm sorry, I can't stop thinking about this.
That's why we do it. That's why we do it live. This is not rehearsed. This isn't rehearsed at all. That's the word. Next week, we got ideas. We got ideas on what we're going to be doing. We're going to catch up on The Curse and talk about several episodes, and then we'll do two episodes of Fargo. Those things are set in stone. And we'll be back next week. And then the next week after that, we're off. I think that, if my math is right, that might even be close to Christmas. And that's why we're off. So we'll see everyone. See you on YouTube. And we'll also talk to you via your podcast app. Y'all want to shout out anybody real quick? You might want to say hello to Jalen Milrow.
Roll Tide.
That's our ending.